Krishna, who is the friend of Arjuna, and Krishna, who is the chariot driver of Arjuna, the Supreme Lord, the master and controller of the universes. And the last verse of the sixth chapter has explained that the yogi, who is in a class by himself, is the one who is thinking of Krishna within. Madgate antaratmanam. And worshipping Krishna, shraddhavan, when there is avan at the end of a word. Shraddha means faith, avan means one who possesses faith. Shraddhavan, possessing great faith, he is the most dear to him of all. And is in a class by himself. How does one get to be Shraddhavan? By hearing Shastra. And hearing from strong realized devotees. And how does one get to know anything about Krishna to be able to think of him always within and thus worship him? By the same process of hearing Shastra and hearing from the devotees. And that is called transcendental knowledge. Far different from the jnana, which is the knowledge that we are not our bodies. So, this is that thing that puts us on the top rung of the yoga ladder by which we are practicing bhakti yoga, is specifically this hearing about Krishna and obtaining transcendental knowledge of Krishna. And Krishna is the absolute truth. So therefore, knowledge that fixes us in Krishna's service is called knowledge of the Absolute, or knowledge about Krishna, or knowledge about the Absolute Truth, and that is the title of the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna, in this second set of six chapters, is going to explain knowledge about Him, devotional service, free from karma and jnana. The first six chapters had to do so much with karma and jnana. And the purpose of karma and jnana is to purify the heart. But ultimately, the purpose of the purified heart is to become fixed in the devotional service of Krishna, and that devotional service is described in these middle section chapters as something that is special, is hidden. So similarly, these six chapters are hidden in the middle of the Bhagavad Gita. Hidden and protected. Knowledge that we are not our bodies. What mode of material nature does that come from? Goodness, yes. But this knowledge of Krishna is not obtainable within the modes of material nature. It's descending knowledge. So therefore one must hear about it. Through speculation, through practically speaking by oneself, by intellectual capacity, one can understand that he's not the body by this right discrimination. But one can never understand about Krishna through this process, because all that is within the realm. The knowledge that we're not a body is within the realm of the modes of material nature. But knowledge of Krishna is full transcendental knowledge, and to achieve it, because it's descending, one needs bhakti, not jnana. One needs devotional service. Devotional service is descending. It is Krishna's own energy. And one must come into contact with that energy to actually attain devotional service. So this point is essential, that one can know Krishna only by devotion. Jnana and karma, practically speaking, are useless. And not only can one not know Krishna, but only by devotion, not by karma and jnana, one can attain the results of karma and jnana only by devotion. So devotion is independent, and karma and jnana are actually dependent on Krishna. Now, many times in the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna has interrupted what Krishna is saying by asking a question or making a comment. But here, Krishna, without being asked, is going to explain how to come to the platform of always remembering Him within, Madhvite Anantaratmanam. And why is Krishna immediately going to speak about that? Because it's so important. That yogi who is Madhvite Anantaratmanam is the best yogi. Now Krishna is going to explain more about that. And who is that yogi? It is the one, the devotee who has full faith and mind fixed fully on Krishna. So that has been explained in 647. But how does one get knowledge of Krishna to fix his mind on Krishna and to have full faith in Krishna? This is explained in 7.1 and 7.2. The first thing that Krishna says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, now hear, O son of Krita, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. So the beginning is Maya Shakta Mana, that with mind attached to me, O son of Krita, Yogam Yunjam, by practicing self-realization, Mahasraya, in consciousness of me, in Krishna consciousness. So here is the process that's being described. First one has to attach his mind to Krishna. A shakti, a shakta. This is actually the stage prior to bhava. It's a very advanced stage that comes from hearing about Krishna and developing the taste for Krishna. Beyond the taste is this attachment. A shakta, maya shakta. When one's mind is attached to Krishna, then by practicing yoga in full consciousness of Krishna and Krishna consciousness, then asamsayam samagram, without a doubt, completely without a doubt, to obtain Krishna, mam, me, yata, how, yas, yasi, you can know me completely. How to do this? To get one's mind attached to Krishna, to practice Krishna consciousness in that state. How to know Krishna fully by doing that, without a doubt, completely. Touch Renu, try to hear from me now. So now hear from me means that because the knowledge is beyond the modes, this is the only access we have to the descending source. Now hear from me, O son of Prita, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, that means Ananya Bhakti, which is described later in the 8th chapter, Ananya Bhakti, with mind attached only to me, in full conscious of me. This means bhakti only, free from the desire of karma jnana. Jnana kama anavrita anakulena Krishna anushilanam. This is the process of cultivating Krishna consciousness as described by Rupa Goswami. It's said here by Krishna. With mind attached to me, again, mind attached to me means Krishna can be only known by someone who is very, very much in love with him, who is attached to him completely. And that way Krishna can be known in full, but actually Krishna can't be known in full because he's unlimited. But still, one should try to know as much about him as possible. In that sense, try to know him in full, free from doubt. And this freedom from doubt is possible by knowing Krishna in full. And knowing in full means knowing that he is the complete realization of the Absolute Truth, not Brahman and Paramatma. And by hearing about Krishna, one will know him full without a doubt, and will actually realize Krishna as the complete knowledge of Brahma, of the non-dual knowledge of the Absolute Truth, but the complete realization. That is Bhagavan realization. Now, hear, O son of Prita, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Prabhupada explains in the purport. In the first 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul, capable of elevating himself to self-realization, by different types of yogas. At the end of the sixth chapter, it has been clearly stated that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of yoga. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth completely, but not otherwise. Impersonal Brahma Jyoti, or localized Paramatma realization, is not perfect knowledge of the absolute truth because it is partial. Full and scientific knowledge is Krishna, and everything is revealed to the person in Krishna consciousness. In complete Krishna consciousness, one knows that Krishna is ultimate knowledge beyond any doubt. Different types of yoga are only stepping stones on the path of Krishna consciousness. One who takes directly to Krishna consciousness automatically knows about Brahma Jyoti and Paramatma in full. By practice of Krishna conscious yoga, one can know everything in full, namely the absolute truth, the living entities, the material nature, and their manifestations with paraphernalia. One should therefore begin yoga practice as directed in the last verse of the sixth chapter. Concentration of the mind upon Krishna, the Supreme, is made possible by prescribed devotional service in 9 different forms, of which Shravanam is the first and most important. The Lord therefore says to Arjuna, Tat Shranu, hear from me. So, this chapter, what will we hear in this chapter? Krishna is explaining to hear from me. And we will hear so much knowledge of the Absolute Truth. We'll hear about, in the first 3 verses, the importance about hearing about Krishna as the process. Then in the second section, we'll hear about Krishna, how to see Krishna everywhere by understanding Him as the source of both the material and spiritual energies. And that everything is a combination of the material and spiritual energies. Every single thing that we see is just simply a combination of the material and spiritual energies. So therefore, Arjuna, even on the battlefield, can see Krishna everywhere. Mad gatein antaratmanam. And that Krishna, so that's what we'll see here in chapter B, that knowledge. In chapter C, we'll understand what stops people from surrendering to Krishna as everything, and that's the modes of material nature, and therefore one should surrender to Krishna and pass beyond the modes. And then in D we'll hear who has knowledge and does surrender to Krishna, and who lacks knowledge and doesn't surrender to Krishna. And then in section E we'll hear about another type of people who don't have knowledge, and they do surrender, but they surrender to the wrong things, the demigods and to the impersonal. They have no knowledge, and they don't surrender to Krishna, but they surrender to other things. And then in F, the bewilderment of the living entity. What is that thing that bewilders the living entity, and how and what frees him and liberates him and fixes him on Krishna, through knowledge of Krishna. So that's what we're going to hear in this chapter. Text 2. I shall now declare unto you in full this knowledge, both phenomenal, that means the material, and luminous, that means spiritual. So both material and spiritual knowledge Krishna is going to tell Arjuna, and thereby, but this being known, nothing further shall remain for you to know. So that's encouraging for us. We should, if we learn this, there is nothing else to be known, practically speaking. This Prabhupada explains in the purport. Complete knowledge includes knowledge of the phenomenal world, the spirit behind it, and the source of both of them. This is transcendental knowledge. So this is glorification about Krishna, about transcendental knowledge here, about Krishna and his material and spiritual energies. Now it's interesting that jnanam, so what is this jnanam teham savigyanam? I'm going to tell you jnanam and vigyanam. So jnanam means to know only about the soul, and but jnanam here means knowledge, not just about the soul, but with Krishna as the object. So knowledge is Krishna as the object. And Ramanujacharya says that vijnana means knowledge of Krishna's form. So that's what we're going to hear.
I thought the phenomenon meant material.
Yes.
Vijnana means phenomenon.
Well, there's always, vijnana means numinous. Jnanam, phenomenal.
So it would be material? Yes.
Which?
You said that, you said jnanam means the soul, relationship with Krishna. It's explained phenomenal knowledge, so it's a relationship between the material and the. Like you give us the definition of material.
There's different definitions. That's one of the glories of Sanskrit. They find things in many different ways. So one way is material and spiritual, and Ramanujacharya has described jnanam, meaning knowledge of the soul, or jnanam meaning knowledge of Krishna as the object, and vijnanam meaning knowledge about the, specifically about the form of Krishna. Now, out of many thousands amongst men, one may endeavor for perfection. And out of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So this knowledge is very rare that Krishna is going to be describing. So we are all very fortunate to be able to hear it. Now Krishna is going to, in this chapter alone, in two different places, he's going to describe the rarity of this knowledge again. Because it is very rare. In 7:19, he says, Sa Mahatma Sadolabha, one who knows this is very rare. And in 7:26, when he describes how he knows everything, but no one knows him. So, Mam Tu Veda Nakastina, that me, no one knows. Nakastina, Na Tu Veda Nakastina, no one knows me. But Krishna yet is going to explain that to us. Prabhupada explains in the purport, we'll read the last part. It is not possible for the Brahman realized impersonalist or the Paramatma realized yogi to understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the son of Mother Yasoda or the charioteer of Arjuna. Even the great demigods are sometimes confused about Krishna. Muryanti yat sureya mam tu veda nakastina. No one knows me as I am, the Lord says. And if one does know him, then Saha Mahatma Sadolava, such a great soul is very rare. Therefore, unless one practices devotional service to the Lord, one cannot know Krishna as he is, Tatvata, even though one is a great scholar or philosopher. Only the pure devotees can know something of the inconceivable transcendental qualities of Krishna. In Krishna, in the cause of all causes, in his omnipotence and opulence, in his wealth, fame, strength, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation, because Krishna is benevolently inclined to his devotees. He is the last word in Brahman realization, and the devotees alone can realize him as he is. Therefore it is said, Atapsi Krishna Namadi Nabaved Grayam Indriyai Sevan Mukihi Jivado Swayam Eva Sparatyada. No one can understand Krishna as he is by the blunt material senses, but he reveals himself to the devotees, being pleased with them for their transcendental loving service unto him. So Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So now, this next section, after describing this knowledge and how powerful it is, how wonderful it is, and also how rare it is that one actually can hear this, now we're going to begin that knowledge about the Absolute Truth, about Krishna, about Bhagavan. Krishna himself is going to explain. First, the material world. He's going to summarize the material world in one verse. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. All together these eight constitute my separated material energy. So Bina, Bina Prakritam Astadam. This is Krishna's separated material energy. So this means that the Lord is not actually separated from Krishna, but the energy comes from Krishna. Krishna empowers it to move separately and independently by his power. So it is separated in that sense, and it is not conscious. And these eight can be also from these eight come 24, and that's explained in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Now, what we just heard was the apara energy, or the material energy, or inferior energy. Now we're going to hear about the para, or the spiritual energy of the Lord. And Krishna here is going to describe the spiritual energy in two parts. His spiritual energy and the tattvastha shakti, which is the jiva, which is also spiritual energy. So there's three things. There's the Lord, there's matter, dina prakritam astada, and then there is the jiva. So now, the Lord and the jiva. Beside these, the apara that we just heard, Almighty Amda Arjuna, there's another superior energy of mind which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material, inferior nature. All created beings have their source in these two natures. Of all that is material and all that is spiritual in this world, know for certain that I am both the origin and the dissolution. So we see anything in this material world. So we see at once that these things that we are seeing are simply made up of Krishna. They are Krishna's energies. They're just Krishna's energy, everything that we see. And where do they come from? Krishna is the origin of them. So we see them in different states. We see them in the state of existence being maintained. So we know that Krishna is their source. So he is maintaining them. And then we know Krishna is their source because these energies have their source in him. And also Krishna explains that he is the dissolver of the dissolution of these. So we see things. Everything we see is in one of these three different states. And each time we see that, we should see Krishna. 7. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. Mata parataram nanyat kinchid asti dhananjaya. Maishavam idam pravatam sutre. Sutre means thread. Sutre manigaraiva, as pearls are strung on a thread. So mata means beyond me. Mata parataram nanyat. Mata parataram means superior. Beyond me, superior. Na anyat. There is nothing. And who is Krishna's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says here, let's see if this is the place. No, there's somewhere else where Krishna explains when Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when Krishna sometimes he says Mam Eva, and he points to himself with his finger and to his chest, it's me he's talking about. So Krishna here says, Mata, beyond me, Mata, beyond me, Parataram, superior to this, Na Anyat, there is nothing. He is a person saying this. So this verse defeats Mayavad philosophy. There is nothing. It is not that Brahman is beyond Krishna. Mata, Parataram, Nanyat. Krishna is saying, nothing be superior to me. It is not that Brahman is superior. And not only that, Krishna's example defeats the materialists. Because the example is that his pearls are strung on a thread. So why is this such a wonderful example? Because when we see pearls strung on a thread, do we see the pearls?
Yes.
Do we see the thread?
No.
But yet, the thread is there. And simply, Krishna, as the originator, the creator, the maintainer, and the dissolver, is always there, although we don't see him. But how do we know that Krishna is there? We have to have bhakti to know. And how do we get bhakti? And how do we become Shradavan Bhajateyo Mam Tat Shrinu? By hearing from Krishna. Matat Paratanam Nanya Kinchirasti. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests on me as pearls are strung on a thread. So by understanding the material energy is coming from Krishna, the spiritual energy is coming from Krishna, then we can see everything, in everything, in its origin, in its creation, its maintenance, and its dissolution, which is the Krishna. called Son of Kunti. I am the taste of water. So we see water, but better than seeing water, we drink water. And that taste, Krishna, this is Krishna's energy, he's already explained. Bhumi Rapon Halo Vayu. So he's already explained that I am water. But what do we appreciate most about water? The taste. And that taste that quenches our thirst is Krishna. It's his potency. He is that active ingredient. He's the essence. The taste in water. The light of the sun. The sun is so powerful. It gives off heat and light. And that light is Krishna. The sun and the moon. One is heating and one is cooling. And on a full moon night, sometimes the devotees do parikram. And they see that the places in the shadow of the moonlight, and there's places that are in the moonlight, and the places in the shadow from the moonlight are warmer than the places in the moonlight, because the moonlight is cooling. So heating and cooling, they're both coming from Krishna. The syllable Om in the Vedic mantra, so the very essence, Panava, Savavedeshu, Shabdike Purushamrishu. I'm the sound in ether. So ether is another one of Krishna's energies. Vina Prakrita. And the sound, the essential element of ether is Krishna. What to speak of the ability in man. We are very proud of our ability. We can do this, we can do that, we can program computers, we can make money, we can run a mile in 2 seconds. We are so proud of our energies and abilities. But that ability is given by Krishna, and in one second, it can be taken by Krishna. I am the original fragrance of the earth. So, Bhumi upon the Lovayo. Bhumi, the earth, the fragrance, all fragrances come from Krishna. So the earth is, it's so amazing, because you plant the seed of a rose, and a rose comes up, and all you're doing is adding water, and the rose comes up, and the flower smells like a rose. And then you plant another type of a seed, and all you do is add water, which has no fragrance, it has a taste. And then a champaka flower comes up, and you smell that, or a jasmine flower. All these different fragrances, just by adding water in the seed, they're being extracted from the earth. How wonderful it is, and Krishna has put the fragrance in the earth in that way. All these different fragrances. How wonderful. And fire is another of Krishna's Bina Prakrita. And he's the heat in fire, and which we all appreciate in the winter, and we don't appreciate it in the summer. I am the life of all that lives. Because he's explained that he's the... What is the life in all that lives? What is the life? The soul. Krishna's explained that aparyayam, that he's the soul. The soul is his energy, not different from him. Now we have to see Krishna in them and appreciate Krishna, not the creation. The one who put the fragrance in the rose. The one who put the fragrance in the jasmine flower. O son of Krita, know that I am the original seed of all existence, the intelligence of the intelligent, and the prowess of all powerful men. Prabhupada would give the example with Albert Einstein. So he is such a brilliant scientist. He was such a brilliant scientist. So therefore, we want so many more scientists. So why can't the other scientists create another brain like Albert Einstein's, if they are such great scientists? Can they create that intelligence? No. Because Krishna, as Bhumira Ponalok Kamano Bhudhira Ivacha, it is the Bhudhi, the intelligence. He's put the intelligence there. It is a gift from Krishna. It's his external Bina Prakriti. And not only that, he's the prowess of all powerful men. Krishna says, I am the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. I am sex life which is not contrary to religious principles, O Lord of the Bharatas, Arjuna. That means sex life, according to religious principles, is for the propagation of children, not otherwise.
Prabhupada explains in the third point.
Now, to sum up the section on how Krishna is the essence of everything and the source of both the material and spiritual energies. Because again, Krishna is trying to explain how to become Madhyatena Antaratmana and see Him always in our heart with great faith. He's going to sum that up. Know that all states of being, everything that you see, He said He's water, He's taught us how to perceive Him when we're drinking water. And Prabhupada once said in a lecture that even a drunkard, while drinking, if he begins to say rasoham apsukanteya, that appreciating the taste that he loves in the liquor is given by Krishna, he's the rasa, or the taste in the liquid, then he will gradually become Krishna conscious. So there's, by seeing water, by seeing this, by seeing powerful people, now Krishna's going to sum it up and even make it even more inclusive. All states of being, know, all states of being, this is knowledge, so you have to know it. All states of being, be they goodness, of goodness, passion, or ignorance, are manifested by my energy. And all states of being are either goodness, passion, or ignorance. I am in one sense everything. So Krishna is everything, just like, say if we take a piece of paper and we rip it up into so many different pieces. And now, if there was nothing in existence aside from this paper, we could say the paper is everywhere. But the original paper is gone. My notes. Wait a second. It was my notes on this chapter. What to do? It's gone. But Krishna is different from that. Krishna is different to that because He is not gone. Although He is everywhere, He is independent. That is the difference. He is not under the modes of material nature. They, on the contrary, are within Him. So Krishna controls everything, and everything is under the three modes of material nature. But Krishna Himself is above the three modes of material nature. He is above matter. He has nothing to do with it. He's the source of it. He's independent. So that sums up how Krishna is everywhere in the material world through all these different ways, especially the three modes of material nature, the origin, the creation, the destruction, the maintenance of everything. And yet, He Himself is above. And I'll explain this further in the ninth chapter. Now, Krishna is everywhere. We've described that, or Krishna has described that. What is it that stops someone from knowing Krishna and surrendering to Krishna? He's everywhere. What is it that stops? And the answer is, deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, ignorance, the whole world does not know me, who am above the modes and are inexhaustible. Rather than thinking that Krishna is the source of everything, they think that He is within the modes. And this is caused by the three modes of material nature. Now how, on one hand, on the other hand, how to know and see Krishna, that's how to remain deluded, not understand Krishna's position, and being controlled by the modes. One is controlled by the modes and he doesn't understand Krishna. How to know and see Krishna? And who does know Krishna? This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. So here, Krishna, this is where Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's comment, when Krishna says, Daivi eshu gunamayi mama maya dratya mam eva. Krishna is taking his fourth finger and pointing to his chest. Mam eva, to me only and certainly, mam eva ye prapadyante surrender. Maya metan tantite. This is the way to cross over the modes of material nature. Now this point, that mam eva, it is not just surrendering that's glorious, but it's surrendering to Krishna that is glorious. Because later on in this chapter, Krishna is going to describe those who do surrender, but because they have no knowledge, they don't surrender to Krishna. And therefore their situation is not at all glorious. Krishna criticizes them heavily. So in this way, Krishna denies surrendering to demigods or to the impersonal. So should I stop now or what? Anyway, you may tell me to stop, but I'm too fired up. Too bad. So then, now in the next section, why don't all surrender? Why doesn't everyone surrender? Sometimes people are learned and maybe they don't surrender. Why is that? And then Krishna explains, they are miscreants. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest amongst mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, they do not surrender unto me, because they are under the three modes of material nature. But there are those who do surrender to Krishna. They are Sukritinas. Chaturvidha, there are four kinds. Chaturvidha bhajante mam, four kinds of people worship me. They are Jana Sukritino Arjuna. They are Sukritina, they are pious souls. Artha Gigyasa Artha Ti Jani Cha Bharatasava. O best amongst the Bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me. The distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute Truth. So these four, the distressed is Artha. One who is in distress, he's Artha. Then there is the desire of wealth. Now who is the example of the Artha who surrenders to Krishna? Does anyone know? It's from the Bhagavatam. No, the distressed. Artha. Who? Did you get it? Yes, something like that. Yes, Gajendra, yes. Holding a lotus flower in his lotus trunk. He surrenders to Krishna, but out of great distress. And the desire of wealth, that's Artha and that's Artati. That's Artha and Artati. So who is the Artati? Dhruva Maharaj. And then the Gigyasura, that's also in the Bhagavatam, but it's Shonaka Rishi, yes. And then the searching for knowledge of the Absolute, the Jnani, is Shukadev. Shukadev Goswami, all the Kumaras. Now, there's some interesting points on here that it's Artha, Jigyasur Artati. So the Jigyasur is mentioned in the middle because the other two, the Artha and Artati, the distressed and the desire of material wealth, they must come to the platform of Jigyasur to actually speak, make advancement. They have to become curious about Krishna consciousness. Now, the Artha, the distressed one, it's clear what that is. The Jigyasura is the inquisitive one. That means he's inquisitive about the soul, he's inquisitive about self-realization, he's interested in nyaya, or logic, or vyakaran, or Sanskrit grammar. This is all in the category of Jigyasura. And then the Artati, he wants pleasure in this world, or he wants pleasure in the next world. So that means he's a Sakama devotee. So actually all these three are Sakama devotees. They have desires. Like that. But the Jnani, he is Nishkama, because he has no material desires. He desires knowledge. He is Nishkama. And then when he actually gets knowledge of Krishna, then he surrenders to Krishna. Now the next verse answers the question, out of these four, who is the best? And Krishna's answer is, of these, the one who is in full knowledge and who is always engaged in pure devotional service is the best, for I am very dear to him and he is very dear to me. So, the reason why he is the best is because those three, the Artha, Jigyasa, Artati, they are in union with Krishna. They tend to practice devotional service as long as their desire isn't fulfilled. But as soon as their desire is fulfilled, they have a tendency to turn their back on Krishna, give up devotional service. But the Jnani, He has no material desire. So therefore, because his tendency is to be continuous, he is the best. He is called in this verse, he is Ekabhakta. Ekabhakta means that his only interest is in devotional service. So it's Tesham Jani Nitya Yukta. One in full knowledge. He is always engaged. Ekabhakta. Ekabhakta. Ektabhakti Vishishyate. He's always engaged in devotional service, therefore he is special. For I am very dear to him, Krishna says, and he is very dear to me. Mama Priya. Priyo hi janino charitam aham sasha mama priya. To me he is very dear, because these love Krishna, and therefore, because they love Krishna, Krishna loves them. They're not interested in wealth and inquisitiveness. They're interested or material distress, removing it. They are simply interested in Krishna. They're ekabhakta. So Baladeva Vidyabhusana has said that the jnani is best. This is very interesting. The question was, who is best? So he says that the shishyati, he is special. That the jnani is best because he is ekabhakta. But Baladeva Vidyabhusana says that Krishna isn't satisfied by saying he's best. He further opens up his heart and says, Mama Priya, in the last line, that not only he is best, but he is very dear to me. Because he has no other desires, and he's going to Krishna in the mood of devotion. So one may think, oh, the jnani is very wonderful, obviously he was taken to devotional service, and the other two, oh, they're low class, and we don't like them, etc. So one may ask, does that mean that the jnani is dear to Krishna, and that the other three aren't dear to Krishna? And the answer, Krishna's answer is, all these devotees are undoubtedly magnanimous souls. So Krishna is affectionate to all of them. But he who is situated in knowledge of me, I consider to be just like myself. Being engaged in my transcendental service, he is sure to attain me, the highest and most perfect goal. So Krishna is here glorifying the jnani who comes to Krishna not desiring anything except being situated at Krishna's lotus feet. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, after hearing the glorification of the jnani, he says, but the jnani is most dear. And Krishna says, that he is like my own body or myself. He is more dear to me than my own body, even more dear than Shiva, Balaram, Prajumya, or Rukmini Devi. But although this pure devotee is as dear to me as my own self, my prema bhakta devotee is more dear to me than my own self. And he quotes in the 10th canto how Krishna says, talking about the gopis, that the gopis are more dear to Krishna than his own self.
That makes sense.
Huh?
The
jnani who comes to Krishna is a pure devotee. Who comes to Krishna because he has to have given up his desire for jnana. Because uttama bhakti is defined as jnana kama anavrita, is giving up. But he's come to the position of jnani, and then he gives up his jnana and takes shelter of Krishna. Because knowledge means I'm not my body, and I'm satisfied with that, and I'm meditating. But he's given up that and becomes a devotee. And because he has no material desires, he very quickly makes his hands and is so dear to Krishna. After many, many births, well, then the next question is, how long does it take such a jnani before he attains prema? And the answer is, after many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. Prabhupada explains in the purport, in the beginning of spiritual realization, while one is trying to give up one's attachment to materialism, there is some leaning towards impersonalism. When one is further advanced, he can understand that these are the activities in spiritual life, that there are activities in spiritual life, and these activities constitute devotional service. Realizing this, he becomes attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrenders to Him. At such a time, one can understand that Lord Sri Krishna's mercy is everything, and that He is the cause of all causes, and that this material manifestation is not independent from Him. He realizes the material world to be a perverted reflection of spiritual variegatedness, and realizes that in everything there is a relationship with the Supreme Lord Krishna. Thus, he thinks of everything in relation to Vasudeva or Sri Krishna. Such a universal vision of Vasudeva precipitates one's full surrender to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna as the highest goal. Such surrendered souls are very rare. So these three Sakama devotees must come to the level of Jnani before going back to Godhead. They must. So that's clear from the third chapter and the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that one has to give up his material desires to make advancement. And we have to come to the platform of Nishkam, and then from the platform of Nishkam, go to the platform of full surrender. Okay. So what is the position? Then the next section. Describes what we mentioned. Those who surrender, but not to Krishna. Now in the third chapter, Krishna has described already those who surrender to demigods after explaining Yayatamam Prapadyate, that he reciprocates with everyone. Then why doesn't everyone surrender to him? Because some people so much desire material things, they just surrender to demigods to get them. And Krishna is the one who awards the results for the demigods. But the very fortunate Sukritinas, the one who is Artha Gigyasa Artha T, they approach Krishna for that. And because they approach Krishna for their material desires, Krishna appreciates that so much, they are very dear to him. But some, they have material desires, they don't approach Krishna. Because their intelligence has been stolen, Krishna explains. Those whose intelligence has been stolen by material desires surrender unto demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own nature. So what is the position again of those who surrender but not to Krishna? They are neither in the group of those who don't surrender, and they are not in the group of those who do surrender to Krishna. They are in a different group. So they surrender but not to Krishna. And what is their position? They are Rita Gyan. They are deprived of knowledge. And therefore, Krishna is explaining knowledge here. So we don't become deprived of knowledge. He wants us to have knowledge, so we surrender properly. Ritta-jnana. And that also, less literal translation is that they are less intelligent. They are less intelligent. Now, with the Artha Gigyasa Artha T, with the Artha T, they also have material desires for wealth, etc. But they approach Krishna and they obtain their material desires, but Krishna takes longer to give it to them because he demands their heart become purified first. Now, men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods, but my devotees ultimately reach my supreme planet. So, the demigods worshippers, they worship just as hard or even harder, as we find out in the ninth chapter, than the devotees of Krishna. But yet, look at the difference between their results. They're working so hard, but the results are different. The worshippers of the demigods go to the demigods, but the worshippers of Krishna go to Krishna's planet. And the difference between the two planets are described in chapter 8 and chapter 9, and we'll hear about them. Because their fruits are different. One is temporary fruit, and if one worships Krishna for one's material desires, one gets eternal fruit. And these people are therefore called alpamedasam, which means very small intelligence. Ritta-jnana, less intelligent. Alpamedasam, small intelligence. Now, what about the impersonalists? There's others who don't surrender. Avyaktim, vyaktim apanam, manyate mam buddhaya. So the others are called alpamedasa, less intelligent, the ritigyana, small intelligence, but the impersonalists are called abuddhaya, or no intelligence. Unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I am the supreme, that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, was impersonal before, and now I have assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered. This is why they don't understand. They don't have knowledge, because they are covered by Krishna's internal potency. Yoga Maya Samavrita. Yoga Maya Samavrita. I'm covered. I cover them by my internal potency, and therefore they do not know that I am unborn and unfallible. So they are muda. They are fools. So they even get a bigger condemnation, the impersonalists, than the demigod worshippers. So these people cannot see Krishna. There's a covering over them. So there's a covering between them and Krishna. But is it that Krishna can't see them? So here is that verse that was mentioned by Prabhupada in the purport in the beginning. Vedaham samatipshani vartramani sarjana bhavishyani shabhutani mamtu vedana kashchana. O Arjuna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know everything that has happened in the past, all that is happening in the present, and all things that are yet to come. I also know all living entities, but me, no one knows. So Krishna, although the living entities may be covered, but Krishna is never covered, and nor is his knowledge. So how is it, after describing that the living entities of the world have been covered, how is it that they become bewildered, and how is it that they become, what is the bewildering factor? Krishna explains here also why a jnani is very rare, because he is not bound, as he'll explain, by the dualities of happiness, unhappiness, respect, disrespect, male, female. These arise from what is called in this verse, itstadvesha samutena, by desire and aversion. Itsadvesha samutena dvanva mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammoham sargayante parantapa. O sign of Bharata, O conqueror of the foes, all living entities are born into delusion. And what is that? What is that bewilderment? They're bewildered by dualities that have arisen from desire and hate. And why people become devotees? How is it possible if everyone is born into delusion? Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are freed from the dualities of delusions, and they engage himself in my service with determination. So by the mercy of the glance of a pure devotee, the sins are removed, faith is established, and one can perform devotional service. Prabhupada explains in the purport, all the devotees of the Lord traverse this earth just to recover the conditioned souls from their delusion. Now, Krishna, in the last two verses of this chapter, is going to explain, in the next verse, he'll explain the fourth kind of Sakama devotees. Explain three kinds of Sakama devotee, Arta, Gigas, or Azatis. Those three are called Kama Mishra, or Sakama. Their devotional service is mixed with Kama, or desires. But this fourth kind is the Yoga Mishra, or his devotion is mixed with yoga, or the desire for liberation. And this is going to be explained further in the fourth chapter. Intelligent persons, so this verse explains this, the Yoga Mishra devotee. Intelligent persons who are endeavoring for liberation from old age and death take refuge in me in devotional service. So some people take refuge in Krishna's devotional service not to get material desire, but to get free from birth, death, old age, and disease. They're actually Brahman, because they entirely know everything about transcendental activities. So three concepts are mentioned in this verse. Brahma, Adhyatma, and Karma. Then in the next verse, Those in full consciousness of me, who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation of the demigods and all methods of sacrifice, can understand and know me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even at the time of death. So, three other concepts are mentioned in this verse. The Adibhuta, Adidaiva, Adiyagya. So, Adibhuta, Adidaiva, Adiyagya, Brahma, Adiatma, and Karma. These concepts are explained, they're mentioned by Krishna in the end of the 7th chapter, and Arjuna asks about them in the beginning of the 8th chapter, what is the meaning of them. Now, this last verse is interesting. Those in full consciousness of me, so in other words, those who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation of the demigods and all methods of sacrifice. So for the materialists, he's already explained in the beginning of this chapter, Krishna is the governing principle. If you're worshipping the demigods, he is the governing principle of all the demigods and all the methods of sacrifice. If one understands that Krishna is the principle behind that, even at the time of death, he can know Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's directing the knowledge and the desires of so many other classes of people. If they do have actual knowledge, he's directing them, that will direct them towards him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the time of death, even they can know him. It's an important question on a battlefield to discuss what is to be done at the time of death and what should one be conscious of at the time of death. Okay, thank you for your patience and tolerance.